Hey everyone, and welcome to The Deep Dive. Today we're tackling a topic that's close to so many of you. How young children transition from Alaska's Infant Learning Program, or ILP, to preschool special ed in the Anchorage School District.
And you've sent us some incredible materials to dive into. We're talking program guidelines, personal stories, the whole nine yards.
You're really thinking ahead, which is awesome. So today we're going way beyond the what and getting into the nitty-gritty of how this transition actually works, especially for those of you wanting to be strong advocates for your kids.
And a perfect place to start is with the backbone of all this idea.
Idea. Okay, now that sounds pretty official. Like, are we talking secret agents and stuff?
Not quite secret agents, but it is a pretty big deal.
Okay, good to know.
IDEA stands for the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. Basically, it's the rule book that makes sure all children with disabilities, no matter where they are, have access to a free and appropriate public education.
Okay, that makes sense. So how does IDEA work with ILP and preschool special education?
Well, there are two main parts of IDEA we'll be looking at today. Part C covers services for those little ones, the babies and toddlers, which is where ILP comes in. Then there's Part B, which kicks in at age 3 and covers special education services within the school system.
So it's kind of like chapters in a book, each one covering a different stage.
Exactly. And to make sure things flow smoothly between those chapters, Alaska has something called Memoranda of Agreement, or MOAs, at both the state and local levels.
MOA. So what do those do?
Think of them as roadmaps. They spell out exactly who does what between ILP and the school district during this transition. No more guessing games for anyone.
So everyone's on the same page, following the same directions. I like it.
That's the goal. This whole process is built on collaboration. From pinpointing kids who might need a little extra support to developing those really individualized plans, the MOA makes it clear that ILP and the school district work hand in hand every step of the way.
I'm starting to get the bigger picture now. We've got the law, IDEA, laying the groundwork. Then we have the roadmap, the MOA, guiding everyone, and this big emphasis on teamwork between ILP and the school district. But what does this actually look like for families on the ground?
Well, it all begins with something called Child Find.
Child Find. Sounds kind of like a detective agency.
In a way, it is. Both ILP and the school district are tasked with actively looking for and identifying any young children in their communities who might be eligible for these services.
So no child slips through the cracks. They're casting a wide net to make sure everyone who needs support is on their radar.
You got it. And once a child is identified, ILP takes the lead, providing those early intervention services that can make a world of difference. Then, as that child gets closer to their third birthday, that's when the transition notification comes into play.
Okay, so it's basically a heads up to the school district that a child will be moving from ILP to preschool special education.
Precisely. At least 90 days before the child turns 3, ILP sends a formal notification to the school district letting them know the child will be coming their way. This acts as a referral, and this is key. This is also when parents are given something called procedural safeguards.
Procedural safeguards. Okay, now those sound pretty official and important.
They are. Think of them as your guidebook to the whole special education process. They spell out your rights as a parent. For example, if you disagree with how the school district evaluated your child, those procedural safeguards give you the right to seek an independent evaluation. It's all about empowering you.
Knowledge is power. That's so important for parents to know. But before we go any further, let's rewind a bit to before that notification is even sent. What's happening on the ILP side of things?
Even before that notification goes out, ILP is already working closely with the family to create a game plan for this transition. It's all part of their Individualized Family Service Plan, or IFSP.
So it's not just a matter of saying, happy third birthday, see you later. There's a lot more to it.
Right. The IFSP takes a long view. It outlines not only the services a child is currently getting, but also the specific steps that will support their development and smooth the path for their move to a school setting.
That makes sense. So how does everyone stay on the same page during this process?
That's where the transition conference comes in.
Okay, conference time. What exactly happens at one of these?
It's really a chance for everyone involved to sit down together and make sure they're all on the same page. We're talking about representatives from ILP, folks from the school district, and most importantly, the parents. They come together to talk about the child's specific needs, share any important information, and basically ensure a smooth handoff.
So are we talking about the nitty-gritty here, like what services the child might need, any challenges that might pop up, what's on the agenda?
You've got it. Everything's on the table. They'll look at the child's current IFSP, go over any evaluations that have been done, and discuss what services might be helpful in a school setting. It's really about having that open communication, making sure everyone leaves with a clear understanding of the plan.
Wow, this is all sounding reassuringly thorough. Nothing's left to chance, it seems.
That's the idea. And remember, IDEA Part B kicks in at age 3, and the goal is to have what's called an Individualized Education Program, or IEP, ready to go by a child's 3rd birthday.
If I'm hearing you correctly, individualized seems to be the key word throughout this whole process.
You hit the nail on the head. Every child is unique, with their own strengths and needs, and these plans are specifically designed to support that. An IEP outlines the specific instructions, therapies, or supports a child will need to succeed in a school setting.
So let me get this straight. We've got this carefully coordinated handoff between ILP and the school district, with IDEA and the MOA setting the stage, and collaboration and individualized plans are at the heart of it all. This is all great, but where does this leave parents? What's their role in all of this?
This is where those procedural safeguards we talked about really come into play. They're the tools that empower parents to be equal partners in this journey and to ensure their child is getting the absolute best support.
So the procedural safeguards are like a parent's secret weapon?
Exactly. Parents are their child's best advocate. They know their child better than anyone else. But enough about the technical stuff. Let's meet Kiva and Thomas. Their stories give us a glimpse into what this transition looks like in the real world.
I love that we're getting into some real life examples. It's one thing to talk about the guidelines, but it's a whole other thing to see how it all works for families.
And as you hear their stories, you might even think of some questions you want to ask as you navigate this process with your own child.
Right. So listeners, let's begin with Kiva. Her journey gives us a good look at what this process can be like from her initial evaluation all the way to developing her IEP.
When Kiva was assessed, there were some delays in a few key areas. Her cognitive development, how she was communicating, adapting to new situations, and then in some of those social and emotional skills too.
So with those delays, how did her team at ILP figure out what kind of support she'd need going forward?
Well, they use a variety of assessments. It's all about getting a really clear picture of a child's strengths, you know, and pinpointing those areas where they might need that extra bit of support.
So these assessments, are they like standardized tests? What are we talking about here?
They are standardized. And that's important because it lets professionals compare how a child is developing compared to other kids their age.
Makes sense. So for Kiva, these assessments helped determine that autism was the most appropriate eligibility category for her. Did her parents play a role in that decision?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
A parent's input is invaluable in this process. Nobody knows a child better than their parents.
100%.
And in Kiva's case, her parents were very proactive. They shared their observations, their concerns, and that open communication played a key role in making sure Kiva's plan was truly individualized.
That's so important. So what did Kiva's IEP focus on? What were some of the goals they set for her?
Her IEP really zeroed in on communication, social skills, and those foundational early academics, areas where a little extra support can make a huge difference as they enter a school environment.
Can you give me an example? Like, what would one of her goals look like in those areas?
Sure. One goal might be for Kiva to learn to communicate her needs using pictures, or maybe to participate more comfortably in small group activities. It's all about setting those achievable steps.
So very tailored to her specific needs. Got it. Now let's talk about Thomas for a minute. You mentioned his case was a bit more complex.
It was. Thomas's assessments showed multiple disabilities. He was experiencing something called myoclonic seizures, and he also had cortical visual impairment, which affects how the brain processes visual information.
Wow, that does sound like a lot to navigate for him and for his family.
It definitely presented its own unique challenges. And because of that complexity, the team used a very comprehensive approach to his evaluation. They looked at his motor skills, his vision, all those developmental areas we talked about with Kiva.
So even more in depth to make sure they were getting a complete picture.
Exactly. And based on that thorough evaluation, they determined that multiple disabilities was the most appropriate eligibility category for Thomas.
And it's important to remember these categories. They're not meant to label kids, right?
That's such an important point.
Yeah.
These categories are simply a way to ensure that children receive the specific services and supports that are going to help them thrive.
Okay, that makes sense. So what were some of the specific challenges Thomas was facing, and how did his IEP address those?
One of the biggest challenges for Thomas was that his seizures would often impact his vision.
Oh, wow. So he'd have a seizure and then temporarily lose his vision. That's got to be incredibly difficult for him.
Imagine how disorienting that must be. And of course, that made it incredibly difficult for him to navigate his surroundings safely. So his IEP took that into account, incorporating things like visual supports, high contrast materials, clear signage, things like that.
That's amazing. I would have never even thought of that, but it makes so much sense. What about his other needs, like getting around?
Well, Thomas also needed some adaptive equipment to help him with his mobility. And his IEP also made sure there was specialized transportation to get him safely to and from school.
It's really incredible when you think about it, how they take all of these different aspects of a child's life into consideration, from what they need inside the classroom to how they're going to get there.
A well-crafted IEP is all about creating a supportive, inclusive learning environment. And that looks different for every child. This is where those procedural safeguards we talked about earlier come in handy, because they give parents the power to make sure those individual needs are being met.
Kiva and Thomas's stories really highlight how personal this journey is, how different it can be for each child and family.
Absolutely. There's no one-size-fits-all in this process.
Yeah.
But the good news is there's a ton of support available. And parents, you're your child's best advocate. Remember that.
Right. So, listener, as you hear these stories and reflect on your own experiences, what stands out to you? What's caught your attention so far?
Well, you know, I was looking through the materials you sent, and one thing that really struck me was this agenda from a meeting between Part C and Part B providers.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it seems like they're getting together specifically to talk about this transition process.
That's right. And it just goes to show how important that collaboration is. It's about ILP and the school district being on the same page, working together, and ultimately making this transition as seamless as possible for families.
And this isn't just happening in one small pocket of Alaska, right? This commitment to collaboration is statewide.
Absolutely. That's the beauty of the MOA. It's about making sure families have a consistent experience no matter where they are in Alaska. Consistency is huge. It's about making sure this process is equitable and accessible to everyone. But I have to imagine, even with these guidelines, the MOA and all the collaboration, there are still some bumps in the road, things you've learned from working with families going through this transition.
Oh, absolutely. And that's why it's so important for parents to be active participants in this whole process. Don't be afraid to ask questions, and lots of them.
Right. Don't be shy.
Your ILP team, the school district, they're there to support you.
It's about being your child's voice in all of this. What else? What's another piece of advice you find yourself giving parents often?
You know your child better than anyone. Don't underestimate the power of that knowledge. Share those insights. Share your observations. If you have concerns, voice them.
And if something doesn't feel right, if a recommendation from the school just doesn't seem like a good fit for your child, you do have options, right?
You absolutely do. That's what those procedural safeguards are for. Those are your tools, your rights as a parent.
They're there to empower you.
Exactly. Request additional evaluations. Disagree with a recommendation. There are organizations like Stone Soup Group or Disability Law Center that can provide support. You are not alone in this.
So important for people to remember. It takes a village, right?
It does. But it all circles back to that open communication, that real collaboration between families and educators.
Because that's where the magic happens.
That's where the magic happens. Imagine parents and educators are in sync, sharing observations, brainstorming together, celebrating those big and small victories.
It's about moving beyond the paperwork, beyond the assessments. Seeing each child as the amazing individual that they are.
And this process, this transition, it's not a one-size-fits-all. It's so important to remember that. Every child is different. Every family is different. And flexibility and being responsive is key.
Yeah.
But above all, remember that a child's best interests should be at the heart of every decision. That's what matters most.
At the end of the day, that's what it's all about.
It is.
So to our listener, as you navigate this path, please remember, you're not alone on this journey. You have rights, you have a powerful voice, and there are resources ready to support you every step of the way.
You are your child's greatest champion. And with the right information, a collaborative spirit, and a whole lot of heart, you can help your child soar.
And that's a wrap on our deep dive into transitions from ILP to preschool special education here in Alaska. We hope this conversation has left you feeling informed, empowered, and ready to embrace this journey with confidence.
Remember, never stop asking questions. Keep sharing those valuable insights about your child and working together with their team. You've got this.